right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Big thanks to Demi and Mikey for taking us through the afternoon. They had a lot of fun. It's Thursday, the 23rd of October, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7 o'clock, Bernard Jackman and Keith Tracy are in studio to talk soccer and rugby. I've been catching up with Denise O'Sullivan ahead of Ireland's big match in the Aviva Stadium tomorrow. Plus, we'll be live to Tallaght Stadium as it's kickoff for Shells and Shamrock Rovers in their Conference League group stage campaigns. All of that, plus Jeff Shepherd will have our eye on America. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200, or on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome along. I am delighted to say that Bernard Jackman and Keith Tracy are both here in studio. So much to get through. Live action tonight and already building up to what will be a great weekend of sport. So let's get started with the games that are already underway. Shelburne are in action in the Conference League that kicked off at 5:45 against Keith.
Skenge.
We'll go with that, absolutely. And how it's nil all, how have they been doing so far?
To be fair, there's not a lot of goal mouth action in the games just yet. The pitch doesn't look particularly good. It looks fairly bobbly. It's a little bit cagey. I like the formation of Shelbourne. They've got five at the back with Mark Coyle. Whenever they're building up, he's popping into midfield and trying to create overloads there. Jack Henry Francis is one who I seen an awful lot before he went across the water to Arsenal, and now he's come back. I've been just as impressed with him. Really, really good player. Kieran McEnroy as well. This Skenger aren't a bad bunch. I've got good news and bad news for the Shelbourne fans. They probably didn't know this, but they've got Ronaldo and Kaká Skenger. The problem is the Ronaldo boy is a left back. His name is he's not quite as prolific as the 40-year-old.
So he's the third Ronaldo now.
The third Ronaldo. They've got Kaká as well, but Kaká is a 30-year-old Albanian who's actually on the bench. So look, they're a good team, Skenge. Sometimes you can hear these names and think, well, they're not a European powerhouse. You should be able to overturn them. Odebeko had a half-decent chance when he ran in behind, but Skenge did enough just to dampen it out. And it doesn't look like it's going to be a free-flowing game with pretty football. It looks like it's going to just be a little bit of a war of attrition given how poor the pitch looks.
That kind of suits Shelburne, though, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah, but you've got to imagine that Skenge would have known the conditions and would have known what they're playing into. They've got some really dangerous players. Fabrice Tamba, the 21-year-old Senegal right winger, is an absolute live wire. So they've got threats all over the park, but Shelbourne, we know from last season, can be really defensively solid, and they'll have to show that today.
So Shamrock Rovers are playing Celje. That kicks off at 8 o'clock. Another tricky tie you'd expect there for Shamrock Rovers.
It will be. Celje again are a really, really strong team. Again, not a European powerhouse, but a team that will think they can at least get into the knockout stages of this of the Conference League. They're unbeaten in the last 11 games with 9 wins and 2 draws. They beat AEK Athens in the first game of the Conference League 3-1. So, as I say, they've got Franco Kovacic up front, a Croatian, but he scored a hat-trick against AEK. So again, Celje, some really strong players. They've 2 clean sheets on the bounce. They scored 29 goals across the last 8 away games. So they've got some pedigree, but again, Shamrock Rovers, I think, have earned the right now not to be written off in any game they play. So I give Shamrock Rovers, being at home in Tallaght with the stands bouncing, I give them a chance. But again, Celje are a classy outfit.
It's actually quite entertaining, the off-the-pitch drama between the Celje manager and Stephen Bradley. Who would have thought that we would be enjoying a Conference League war words so much?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? But to be honest, if I'm Stephen Bradley, that's music to my ears. When a manager comes out and says all he did was kick it long and you know, they're very physical. Well, they're not highlighting it because they were comfortable with it. They're highlighting it because they're uncomfortable with it. So if I was Shamrock Rovers and Stephen Bradley, I'd pin it up in the dressing room and say, just give them exactly what they're expecting because they're not comfortable with it. And I hate when people say all they did was kick it long. Well, if your press is good, I'm not going to play into your hands. I'm going to play the opposite of what you want to do. So sometimes people play mind games and try and force you into a style of play. If Shamrock Rovers, you know, and to be fair, the evolution within Shamrock Rovers in Europe is that they pick and choose their times to play. I mean, we've seen Manchester City go from back to front, and if Manchester City are going to go from back to front with the great Pep Guardiola, there's absolutely no shame in a Shamrock Rovers doing it.
Okay, we will be chatting to Keith a little bit more throughout the programme. We need to talk about last night's Champions League games as well, and Liverpool being back. We'll do that very shortly. But now it's time to turn our attention to rugby. The URC could do it a bit of a war words now between Leo Cullen and Clayton McMillan. That'd be nice, Bernard Jackman, wouldn't it?
It would be nice. It doesn't happen very often in Irish rugby amongst the coaches. I think the problem is they all, at the end of the day, work for the same employer, and there hasn't been any big bust-ups for a while. Yeah. They're all very polite, very well media trained.
Well, I think that's it. And they also know that sure, they might get each other's jobs as well. I mean, if you'd said Stuart Lancaster was going to be in Connacht a few years ago, nobody would have probably believed you. But so it is. I did mention Clayton McMillan. Let's hear from him now. He was out speaking to the media and he spoke to RTE's Mick Glennon. And for people that don't know, this is the Munster head coach.
Now, obviously, we were delighted with the outcome on the weekend. But, you know, come Monday, we just reviewed the game like we would every other week, and you know, just keep reminding ourselves that, you know, that's in the rear vision mirror now. And, you know, for all the pats on the back, it's short distance from that to a kick up the backside if we don't get the job done again this weekend. So, yep, it's been a good week.
And we all saw maybe how effective a chip on the shoulder or something to prove can be in a team, how they can, you know, harness that into a good weapon. I guess you're aware that Connacht maybe will be coming to Thomond Park with that same sort of something to prove attitude.
Yeah, 100%. That's what we're expecting. You know, they've probably potentially haven't quite got the outcomes that they've wanted from the first few rounds, but they certainly haven't been far away. Unlucky last week. And, you know, a lot of the guys have talked about the rich history between Connacht and Munster, and that it's never an easy game. So we're expecting them at their best, and we'll need to be at ours if we want to get the desired outcome.
Very good. Just finally from me, you've started, or Munster have started to name their team on a Thursday. Usually we associate teams leaving it to the last minute so that their opponents can't do their homework on it. What's the thinking, the reasoning behind you naming it, you know, 24 hours before you have to?
Oh, that's just what I've been accustomed to doing. I would be surprised if a team, you know, changed anything this close to the game based on a team release. I think there's lots of benefits. I think our guys just need to get their head in the right space, and just making that public nice and early, I think helps. We've released a number of players to go and play for their clubs in AIL. We walk through airports where there's thousands of people. Like, I don't know what the big need for secrecy is, to be fair. And I wondered whether others would start doing it. And funny enough, the last couple of weeks we've seen the same thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, we appreciate that anyway in the media here. So thanks very much. Good luck for the week.
Thank you.
That was Clayton McMillan, the Munster head coach, speaking to Michael Glennon a little bit earlier on today. Bernard, how important is it that Munster back up that performance against Leinster now with another good performance and win against Connacht?
I think it's really important. I think that was their best performance of the season. They looked really sharp against the Scarlets round one, but Scarlets have been having a difficult time. That was against a top quality side full of internationals, and they came to Dublin and pulled off a big scalp for them. This is the end of the first block of five games. Munster have been focused on having a fast start, and they can absolutely finish that off in style with a big performance against Connacht at the weekend. Now, they're going to be missing, obviously, the likes of Ty Byrne and Jack Crowley, who are outstanding for them. Brian Leeson is unfortunately injured. Edwin Odogbo, we'll find out if he's back. I think he went off with a HIA. But this is a great opportunity. And I think, look, they're probably better off that it's an Irish province coming, because that will focus the mind. That there's a lot of rivalry individually, and obviously over the last couple of years, Connacht and Munster have had some ding-dong battles. So I think it's the perfect game for them, coming back off a huge high of beating Leinster, back at home, and a chance to go into this break, as I said, 5-5, which is incredible.
Absolutely. And it seems as well like he's been able to see what he has in terms of his extended squad as well.
Yeah, he's done a great job. He's rotated everybody and still managed to win without being overly...
Sounds like the secret to success.
No, but he has. And he's created, like, speaking to some of the players down there, they just said it's absolutely clear when you go into work in the morning who the boss is. And unfortunately last year, after Graham Rowntree left, and probably even before he left, there wasn't that clarity around who's in charge. Clayton McMillan's in charge. If you've got a rugby issue, you go to him. Who's picking the team? He picks the team. And even on a coaching staff, he said after the game, he said, look, we challenge each other on a Monday, Tuesday, but once we agree upon something, we're absolutely aligned. And I think that's really important. And he's coming out with a big CV, very successful with Waikato, but I think he's got Munster He's got Munster in terms of what are Munster, what are the teams of the past had as kind of their big thing, and it's been team spirit, physicality, stickiness, aggressiveness, and straight away they focus on those and they've got them and they look fit and strong and physical, and that's what they focus on in pre-season. So fair play to everyone who's got this guy in, because I've no doubt he would have been a strong contender for international jobs if he had been on the market any longer.
What about Stuart Lancaster now and Connacht? It's so early in the season, but is this a big game for him, do you feel?
Yeah, it is, because they obviously missed a game. The game was postponed against the Scarlets, but they're very disappointed with their loss to the Bulls, the loss to Cardiff away. And to go into their November break with one win would be a poor return, given the fact that they focus on a fast start like Munster. But realistically, Connacht need to, because they don't have as many internationals as other teams. I know they had Bundy, Finlay and Mack, who only came back last week, but it is a chance. They had a long pre-season because they weren't involved in any knockout stages. Lancaster's worked them hard. Round one, it looked like they kind of really knew what they were doing, but unfortunately that inconsistency that probably affected Pete Wilkins, probably affected Andy Friend, the previous coaches, has been there over the last couple of weeks, and that's a harder thing to fix. To be fair to Lancaster, he doesn't have the talent that Munster have, and I think he will want a recruitment cycle. So this time next year, I'd imagine he'd have added some talent to that squad, but obviously that's medium term. Short term is get as many points as possible this season and continue to build.
So where did Leinster go from here? I know it's Zebra, but I'd say there's a lot more to be done than just go and beat Zebra.
Yeah, look at this. Zebra. Zebra is not the big issue. I don't think it's 5 points that they need. Obviously, having lost the two games in South Africa, they need to start getting 5-pointers now pretty much every week, every round. But we won't really know just what this Leinster team reaction is until they come back, until the players come back. You know, so like the Monday morning review this week would have been a bit ridiculous, because 21 of the players who were playing weren't involved or weren't there Monday. They were with Ireland, and that's a challenge for Leinster. It's a challenge everyone would love to have, because you have all the talent, but yeah, unfortunately they didn't do anything in that game to make you think that they've learned lessons from the past in terms of knockout games or big games, where they just
games, yeah.
This game wasn't a knockout game, but in theory you could have basically knocked Munster back and you could have got 5 points yourself, and they missed that opportunity.
Yeah, very much so. Is there questions around Leo Cullen now, since we'll be chatting a little bit later about Sean Dyche and Nottingham Forest and the turnover of managers in football? I know it doesn't happen in rugby, but at what stage does he become under pressure, Bernard?
I think there's already pressure. I think the pressure really built last season post Northampton, and in fairness they won the URC, but Leinster should be winning URCs every other year, I think, and they haven't been, and they should also be winning European Cups, and I know, I'm not saying it's easy to win them, but when you have the tools Leinster have, so I think there is a lot of pressure on Leo, but it's early days in the season. We'll know what Leinster are like. The challenge for him is to have Leinster firing in May and early June. That's the challenge, and then that'll decide his job.
What about Ulster? They are facing the Lions. What do they need to get from this?
I think they can win this game and win with 5 points. And again, the Lions are a very erratic side. There's not a couple of thousand people there last weekend for their defeat of the Scarlets. It's not a hard place to go and deal with home support. Obviously, the challenge is altitude, but you have to like how Richie Murphy and his coach, a new coaching staff, but a coaching staff that he was very familiar with from the under 20s, Woody Falloon, Mark Sexton, Jimmy Duffy, have gelled. How comfortable they look both sides of the ball. I'm not selling crypto. How comfortable they look both sides of the ball, and yeah, they look like they're on the right track. Now, their internationals, current internationals, have left. So they've left to go to Chicago. So they have a weaker team than they had last week.
What about Chicago, though? When you look at everything that happened in that Munster-Leinster game, what's it going to be like now between the players that are out there and vying for positions?
It'll be interesting. Obviously, Munster have the bragging rights, which is exactly what you would want going into camp. But also, Farrell will be very quick at getting them grounded. I think the worry for Farrell is how badly a lot of those Leinster players play, because they're going to be the majority of the team. And I think it's
if like, they play really well, what does that tell us?
It tells us that they weren't physically undercooked. You know, obviously the game will have helped them, but it will rubbish the idea that they got their physical prep wrong. They are going into this undercooked compared to the All Blacks, undercooked compared to how we normally play in November, because normally we have two European games and at least 1.5 URC games for frontline internationals. So physically it's a different approach, but the test is a test. It's the All Blacks in your first game, and it's obviously Chicago, and there's a lot of history there. It's going to be a phenomenal occasion. And I think he believes that they play better for him, and he'll get the best out of them. And that's we'll know Saturday week evening.
What are the big selection dilemmas that Andy Farrell faces?
Look, I think the biggest one was 10, and I think that's decided.
I've
heard lots of people say, "Oh, Andy Farrell isn't going to be influenced by the media," and of course he should be influenced by the
media.
Sorry,
we should clarify when you say it's decided. Are you saying it's decided and Jack Crowley's wearing
yes.
the 10?
Okay. Sorry, yeah. No, I don't think there's any. There's any way he can't pick Jack for this game. If he wants to be able to stand up and say it's on form, form selection, it's on form. And I think that's the obvious answer. I think Jack came to Dublin in a high-pressure game, and he didn't have it all his own way, because Leinster actually were dominant for a lot of periods of the game in terms of possession and territory. But Jack was at the core of everything good that Munster did, showed serious leadership as well, and performed. And that's not just that game. He was very good 2 weeks before that when he was man of the match against Cardiff in a game that Munster needed him to step up. So I think he's the person in form, and I'd imagine he'll start. The other ones aren't. If Caelan Doris is out, who plays at 8, but there's a rumour that Caelan Doris will start even though he won't have played a game. This Irish team, the squad was very, very conservative, and the team selection will be pretty conservative as well. Obviously Bundy Aki's got a knock, Mac Hansen's unavailable, but in general it'll be faces that we've seen before.
Okay, well, it's still a bit of road to go before that game on Saturday week. We're going to take a very quick break. Bernard, thank you so much for coming in. It's still scoreless in Shelburne's game against Skenja. We'll have more on that from Keith in just a bit. Do stay with us. We'll also be hearing from Denise O'Sullivan after these.
RTE 2FM. This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome back. Keith Tracy is with me in studio. Still scoreless in Shelburne's away Conference League game to Skenja. There is 40 minutes on the clock as it stands. Keith, how have they been doing?
Yeah, like I say, it's not bad. There's not an awful lot of goal mount action for either team. It's a lot of midfield battles, little touch and tackles. As I said, the pitch is not great, so really difficult to build the play up through the middle. And as we speak, Shelbourne have just give away a free kick dead centre of the pitch, and you'd imagine this will be pumped into the box, but not an awful lot in it. So I think, you know, these away games in Europe, sometimes you can have an inferior complex. I think Shelbourne now have been out there for 41 minutes, and I don't think they'll be afraid of what's in front of them, although it's very, very tight. There's not an awful lot between the two teams.
We'll be going to Tallaght Stadium for a preview of the Shamrock Rovers Celje match in a little while with Adrian Eames. Lots of other games going on besides as well. Loads of games in the Europa League, but the big one from Sean Dyche's perspective is his first outing with Nottingham Forest. They take on Porto. That's at 8 o'clock. He was in the academy there. He lives there. How's he going to do as their manager, Keith?
I'm hopefully he'll do very, very well. I've listening to a couple of little bits and bobs since he's picked up the job. I think it's brilliant. He's the third manager in the door after Ange Postecoglou has been removed from the position. I'm hearing on his first day he went in and told the players no more snoods, no more hats, no more gloves. I think it's absolutely brilliant. You know, you don't need those type of things in training. It takes a couple of minutes for you to warm up. And like my Belvoir manager back in the day said, if you're cold, run around a bit more, Keith. It's as simple as that. Just run around a little bit more, lads. And yeah, he's not having it. I believe he softened a little bit and told the lads they can wear white socks in training, which was not a thing at Burnley. I think the words he used were, we're all a little bit too soft here, so we're going to wear shin guards in training and start rattling into each other. So look, I believe football is starting to become full circle again with the introduction of long throws and set piece becoming more and more prevalent. I think he'll be absolutely fine. I'm not sure what the remit is, though, for Sean Dyche. Is it to keep Nottingham Forest in the league? Because he's got 30-odd games to do that. I think he can do a little bit better than that. And as we said, he's knocking around in a European competition. So I can't imagine, the owner of the club has said, keep us in the league and we'll be happy. I think there'll be big, big demands on him. And to be fair, this is probably Sean Dyche's best ever squad. When you look at his Burnley squad, his Everton squads, even his Watford squads from back in the day, this is the most talented squad he's ever had. And I think if he gets them fit, strong and organised, which he will, they probably had a bleed test on the first day, or maybe not, given Porto was just around the corner, but he will get them fit, he will get them strong, he will get them organised. And if the likes of Gibbs White keeps producing his performances, Hudson-Odoi, Elliot Anderson's been a brilliant player over the last couple of months, became an English international. Chris Wood is injured tonight for the Porto game, but you'd imagine a big target man, Sean Dyche, is going to absolutely fall in love with him, and obviously had him at Burnley as well.
Okay, well, you've set that up nicely for us. Looking forward to seeing how it goes. Let's reflect on last night, because there was a lot happening as well. Liverpool have bounced back from four consecutive losses, so they made light enough work of Eintracht Frankfurt. But it was a very curious performance, because Arne Slot has made quite a number of changes. The key one being that he left Mohamed Salah on the bench, and he also found a way to get Alexander Isak and Hugo Ekitike into the squad together, into the team together for the first time. So he's adopted a bit of a change of formation. Are you liking the way Liverpool are playing?
Well, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell. Like I say, at the start of the season, I wasn't convinced by them at all. They seem to be come down a couple of levels. It's fairly explainable when you think of the form of Mohamed Salah hasn't been great. Florian Wirtz hasn't really hit the ground running. The most impressive signing that Liverpool has made is probably Hugo Ekitike. He's been all right since he's come in the door. Alexander Isak played 45 minutes last night. He had to come off with a groin injury. Frimpong also had to come off. So people are saying, you know, Liverpool are back. They've turned the corner. The amount of poor performances they've had in the Premier League up to now seriously outweighs the good performance they've had. And that's one good performance that I could probably pick holes into if I really wanted to be a little bit pedantic about it. But we'll be positive about Liverpool. Five different goal scorers is brilliant. But as I say, Florian Wirtz's form is still not great. I know he got a couple of assists last night, but his form hasn't been great. The physicality seems to be a big, big issue for him in the Premier League. Alexander Isak, what's that groin issue like? Mm-hmm. He's going to be out now for a couple of weeks. He's probably going to need fitness work when he comes back. And I still think an awful lot of teams are targeting Andy Robertson. Now, even if it's Kerkez on that left-back role, they're going after him. And is it going to be Bradley? Is it going to be Frimpong? Is Szoboszlai going to continue at right-back? Who knows? I'm not fully convinced that Liverpool have turned the corner. They don't look anywhere near their impressive best. But I also think it will click at some point. I think Arne Slot and this Liverpool team are way, way too good to just fall off a cliff all of a sudden. Although I do have to say, I think an awful lot of it depends on Mohamed Salah. Mm-hmm. If he keeps performing like he's performing and not scoring the goals, it's probably easy enough to say, well, Trent Alexander-Arnold leaving the building is like turning a tap off behind Mohamed Salah, but his finishing just hasn't been anywhere near the level expected. He's still running around, still, you know, dogged out of possession, running after people, but I think he needs a little reward every now and then just to keep Mohamed running like he usually does.
Yeah, and he's not going to like being on the bench either, that's for sure.
He's not. And like you said, he got a blockbuster contract as well not so long ago. I know there was big talk about him maybe going to Saudi Arabia. Maybe the Liverpool hierarchy are thinking we should have cashed in. Although I have to say, you know, after being so hot for so many years, a couple of weeks not performing is acceptable as long as he comes back.
Yeah, he set his own standards and trying to keep them is always going to be difficult. What about Spurs and Monaco though? It wasn't really their best performance, was it?
No, there was one good player from a Spurs point of view. The only reason that there was no goals in this game is because Vicario was absolutely brilliant. He made save after save after save. And again, I look at the Spurs team and I think with the signings they made, the likes of Xavi Simons coming to the party looks really good. Kudus has been excellent since he's come in the door. Joe Pellini is somebody I really, really like. But they've gone to Monaco, and again, at, you know, Champions League level, Monaco are not a team that would be feared. Even going away to Monaco, the elite heavyweights of the Champions League wouldn't be afraid of them. Yet Spurs went over there and got dominated from start to finish. I realised that had Spurs gone there and played well and got a draw, they'd have been happy with it. But the performance was so, so poor. And the only reason they've got a point in that game is a little bit of poor finish and a little bit of brilliant goalkeeping. But the only player who can walk out of that stadium last night with their head held high was the the goalkeeper for Cardio.
Okay, we're going to leave that for just a minute. It is half a time in that Shelburne-Shenjay game and it is still scoreless. We'll be keeping an eye on it throughout the rest of the show. Time for a quick break. Denise O'Sullivan after these.
This is 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Tomorrow evening, the Republic of Ireland women's team have a really big playoff game, a first leg of the really big playoff game against Belgium. So earlier this week, I sat down with Denise O'Sullivan. I talked to her about her injury layoff and how she's dreaming of more glory days for the girls in green.
Game on.
Soccer.
So Denise, first and foremost, how are you? How's the fitness?
Yeah, good. Obviously got injured about 2 months ago. And yeah, the minute I got injured, I was just thinking about national team and how I'm going to make it back for that camp. And that was my goal the minute I got injured. And yeah, I feel fantastic now. I'm really happy to be in with the squad and really excited for the games.
Given how little you're injured, how active you always are, how much you love being a professional athlete, how did being injured sit with you?
It was tough, yeah. I had a few MCL injuries this year, just little niggles, and this one was a bit more serious, so it set me back a good bit. But yeah, it was definitely mentally tough, but for me, I was still be able to be in the gym. So I was in the gym about 4 or 5 times a week. And then after a few weeks, I was able to be back running again. So I think that helped a lot. And just being around the girls was really helpful. But yeah, my mindset was just to make sure I could be back in with the Ireland team. So I pushed really hard to be able to be here.
It sounds like you are ahead of schedule.
I am. When I first got injured, they told me 12 to 16 weeks. And my answer was, not, it's not going to take that long. And yeah, it's been 8 weeks now. So I got back a good few weeks early. So I'm very happy.
It sounds like as well that you use the work rate that you apply on the pitch to your rehab.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very serious about it. I think everything I do on the pitch, off the pitch, is all aimed towards being the best player I can be on the pitch for my club and country. And that was the same mindset when I got injured, to work as hard as I could, be resilient and just be mentally strong, get back as quick as I can. And I was able to do it.
How much of a help is it that you're in an environment like the Courage where it's so professional?
Massive. I think during that time, our performance team, our medical team, they're world class. So I think having them there, their support, their knowledge to be able to get me back on the pitch as fast as possible, it really helped.
So you got 20 minutes in the Bay FC game. Was it just perfect timing? You're back now, you're on the pitch and ready to go for these Belgium games.
Yeah, exactly. I got 20 minutes. So that was the plan all along coming up to that game, was to get a few minutes. And luckily it went well for the team and I was able to get those minutes. So to be able to get back and just get a few minutes before camp was, I think, really important just to have me in that mindset coming into camp to play Belgium.
It's been a little while since the last camp, the US. Was it difficult having such a long gap?
Yeah, massive. I was obviously at that camp, but I was injured there as well. So it was definitely tough. But I think for myself and the girls, it was hard to be away from each other that long. But look, we're always in touch away from camp. And, you know, we're always talking to each other. So coming back in here again after so long, it's just great to see everyone here.
When you're watching other teams in Europe and you're in the USA, do you ever think, oh, maybe I'd like to try this league or that league?
I do. I think it's always in the back of my mind. I've been with the Courage now 7+ years. I'm the captain now, but you know, I am happy there. I think it's the professionalism of the club is amazing. I think the standards are really, really high, so I get the most of myself there. But yeah, I think going to England has always been in the back of my mind, and I think it still is in the back of my mind for sure.
You've had a bit of a life change as well. I see the engagement ring. So have your priorities changed in any way?
No, I think football is still a priority to me. But yeah, of course, I was very happy with that.
So these Belgium games, Belgium were, of course, in the Euros as well. Did you get to see many of their games?
I did. I watched a few. Very good team. Very strong team. I think they have a lot of strengths. And I think their biggest one is probably on the transition. I think they're very good, very quick. They have some individual class in the team, but for us, I think we have to focus on ourselves this week and see what we can bring to them.
Is it a bit of a, I suppose, a benefit having played in that major tournament? Okay, you know, they didn't reach unbelievable heights, but they still got that experience being together in that kind of environment.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a massive benefit for them, getting to be part of that, playing world-class teams. You always want to be at the big tournaments, so I'm sure it was a help for them and a benefit, but for us, we were able to watch them and kind of see what they're about. And we do know they're a very strong team. And for us going out Friday, we have to be at our best to be able to beat this team. And that's the mentality going into the game, that we have to do everything possible on the pitch to be able to get 3 points.
That's actually a really good way of looking at it, because you did get to see them with their best foot forward, that they mm-hmm. showed all their hand.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was helpful for us to be able to see them. And as I said, again, they are a really strong team. You know, they're ranked very high in the world. They have some world-class players, as I said, and as a team, they're really strong. So for us, yeah, it's going to be a really tough game. We have to go in there with a really strong mentality and give it our all.
Courtney Brosnan is not going to be in the goals. It's been a while now since we haven't seen her or heard her as well, because she's such a vocal player. How much is she going to be missed?
Massively, yeah. She's a really important piece of this team. I think not just on the pitch, she is world-class on the pitch, but off the pitch, she's a leader. She is influential in the way she carries herself. So yeah, she's going to be really missed.
And just then, in terms of the leadership she brings as well, will there almost be more on the senior players because you don't have her around?
Yeah, I think so. I think, as I said, Courtney was a huge leader here. She always led by example. She carried herself the right way. And I think now, yeah, there's going to be a bit more pressure on us to step up and be those senior players. And, you know, we have a lot of young players in this team, and we need to lead by example when we go out there Friday, and not just Friday, I think on the training pitch around the hotel. We need to be very positive, and we need to be influential in everything we do.
Is it something that comes natural to you, Denise, to be a leader, or are they skills that you've developed over time?
It does. I think it came natural to me for sure. I think I lead by example. That's the kind of leader I am. I want to get the best out of the people around me. And I do think I've always kind of been quiet. And I think I did have to learn ways to be more vocal, whether that's on the pitch, whether it's in team meetings. But I don't think I ever changed the way I acted. I always stayed the same and led by example and made sure everyone around me was brought up.
You recently lended your voice to Colin Healy. You shone a spotlight on the treatment of him. You were very critical as well of the FAI. How frustrated were you by that whole situation?
I was frustrated, yeah. I think everyone's seen that I voiced my opinion, and I think for me, I'm a very principled person, and I think when something's not right, I speak on it. And I think I am quiet, so when I speak on it, then it becomes a thing. But I was frustrated, and Colin was a very respected member of staff within the team, one of the best coaches I've ever worked with. So it was hard. It was definitely hard to lose him from the team, and yeah, I was frustrated for sure.
There's been quite a bit of fallout, really. It's probably the best way to put it, from that time with Colin and with Eileen Gleeson. It's recently emerged that she's filed a case in the circuit court. She's accused the FAI of treating her and her team, which is your team, unfairly because of their gender. You were there. Do you feel like you were treated unfairly, Denise?
I think we've come a long way with this team, and I think that comes from a lot of the players that came before us, the Emma Burns, the Anya O'Gormans. I think they pushed a lot for this team, but I think now, as a leader of this team, as someone who's been in this team for 10 plus years, I think there's always things we can push on, and there's always standards that need to be better. So I think for us, we won't stand still, and we'll try and keep pushing those standards. And at this stage, it's not about me, it's about the next generation. It's about the young girls that are going to come in and wear that jersey. So I think for us, we need to keep pushing the standards.
What do you think needs to change?
I think there's a lot that we can work on. I think massively in Ireland that we want to push the women's game, right? I think the investment in grassroots needs to keep coming. I think we need to make young girls believe that there is a chance that you can play for your country. So I think if we do that, and if we invest more in the women's game, I think the game will grow and it'll get better.
What do you think needs to change around your team, though, and that team environment and the supports that you receive?
I think just keep getting support from the top. I think that's what we need. I think there's, as I said, there's always things that can be better for us, and we'll keep fighting for that. I don't think I need to discuss on air what needs to be better. I think that is stuff that is being spoken about behind the scenes with the leadership team. We're always in touch with each other. We're always speaking to people at the top, and we'll continue to do that.
Have you spoken to the PFAI about the concerns that you have?
We're always in touch back and forth throughout the year, and this has been for the past few years. I think, as I said, we're always ironing stuff out. And I think, as I said, as someone that's in the team for so long, I think there is stuff that we can push on and that we can continue to make better. And as I said, we'll continue to do that.
Are you hopeful? Are you confident that the changes that you know need to be made will be made, as you said, for that next generation?
I hope
for
so.
Yourselves.
I hope so. I think that's the goal. I think everyone on this team wants the best for this team, and for someone who's been in the team for 10 plus years, it's about the next generation now, and I want to leave the jersey better. I want to leave this place better for when I leave. So we need to keep investing. We need to keep supporting the women's game and keep pushing it on.
Do you feel a responsibility to use your voice for those coming up? Even your teammates now are quite young as well.
Yeah, I do, 100%. And as I said, I think I'm a quiet person and I'm pretty reserved. But when things need to be spoken about, I will speak up. And you've seen that in the past, and I'll continue to do that. I think I have definitely a huge responsibility to keep pushing the women's game. And yeah, we'll continue to do that.
You're obviously away, so you see the levels, the facilities, the standards, the type of player coming through, the opportunities. When you look here at the structures that we have for women and girls football, are there things that you see that can be done so that we bring more young girls through, so that there are more teammates for you guys at a level that can compete with the best?
I think it starts with grassroots, honestly. I think if they get more investment, I think the game will grow. I think we need to invest in facilities. I think we need to invest in very good coaches. And if we do that, I think the game will rise. I think we need to broadcast the game more. I think if it's seen on TV, I think, you know, young girls will believe that they can one day put on the Ireland shirt. So I'm hopeful it will continue to grow, and that's definitely the hope for me, yeah.
Your manager, Carla Ward, spoke to the media yesterday, and she heard some concerns as well that she has around wanting things to be better. When you hear your manager being a voice for you, does that give you extra confidence in what she's trying to do?
Yeah, I think, look, as a squad and as a coaching staff and players, I think we all have one mission, and that's to make this team better. I think we want to qualify for more major tournaments. And with that, you need more investment. You need standards to be very high. So, yeah, to hear Carla talk about that, it definitely gives us more confidence. It gives us belief. And together, we will push the standards for sure.
Is it a bit frustrating, though, that we're still talking about this stuff, Denise, that you stood up in 2017 and there was that amazing show of solidarity at Liberty Hall, and then you fast forward to we're heading into 2026 now, and it's still a conversation that hasn't moved on too much?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, where we are right now, things are much better than before. I think that comes from, as I said, the Emma Burns, the Anya Gormans, the Olivia Tools, all those women fought for us to be where we are and what we have right now. But I think you can never stand still. I think there's things that need to be better, and we will keep pushing the standard as a team, as leaders in this group, and hope that the women's game pushes on.
And then just as a team, like, it's obviously very difficult for Carla to come in. She comes in, there's fallout from the previous manager, lots of senior players depart for various reasons, mostly because they've come to the end of their playing careers. As a team, though, how would you describe how you've evolved under Carla?
Yeah, I think it's been, look, as you said, Carla has come into a tough spot, right? There's been a lot going on since she's came in. And we want to continue to grow under Carla, but I think it takes time to implement what she wants to do, her style of play. And I think she wants us to play football. And as I said, that doesn't happen overnight. That takes years to build. So look, we believe in what we're trying to do here, and I think that's important that we're all on the same page, and we will continue to work on that. But I do believe that we will continue to get better. But playing football, it's different for us. Usually we're a team that, you know, we're big on pride. We sit in, we defend, and now we're expanded to try and play football. So that's difficult, and she has implemented that, and she has a style of play, and she's setting it. And look, we want to try and do that as players, but it will take time.
Do you think that it's the right approach, or should there be a balance of the two?
I think there is a balance of the two. I think Carla still wants us to be disciplined in defending. I think she wants us to be organised. She doesn't want us to go away from that grittiness and that pride of playing for Ireland, because that's the most important thing. I think when you step on that pitch for Ireland, you have to give 100%, and you have to be there, and you have to battle for each other. But also on the other side, she wants us to play football. So I think there still is that balance. But now it's just trying to evolve in the football part and get used to each other and be able to build out from the back and stuff like that.
The first game against Belgium is at home in the Aviva Stadium. Is that somewhere that you enjoy playing?
Love it, yeah. Of course, it's our national stadium. You know, going through Dublin and seeing all the fans on the way to Aviva is absolutely amazing. So it's going to be a good night and we want everyone to come out and support us. I think we're going to need as many people as behind us as possible. This is a massive game and I'm telling you now, we'll go out there and we'll fight for our lives on that pitch to be able to get 3 points.
What would it mean for you to come through these two Belgian games with the win?
It would mean the world, yeah. I think playing for your country is the ultimate honour. Every time you go out and step on the pitch with the green shirt, you give it your all. And to be able to come away with 6 points in these games would be massive. It would be a big boost for the country. It would be a big boost for the team. And I think it would give us confidence going into next year.
And hopefully get to a World Cup.
Yeah, of course, that's the goal. Already being at a major tournament, we have the feel for it now. And as I said, playing for your country at a major tournament, it doesn't get any better than that. So we all want to be there and we will do our best to get there.
You're the most experienced player in the team now. Everyone else is gone.
It's crazy.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, time flies by, right? I've been playing for the team now for over 10 years, 125 caps, I believe. So, yeah, it's been the best experience of my life. I can't describe how proud I am to play for my country and step on that pitch every time and wear the green shirt is the biggest honour. So I'm just really grateful to be able to be in this position. And as I said, it's about the next generation now, and I want to keep playing and, you know, help them come into this team and help the young ones come into this team to get more experience. And it's just a real honour.
Game on. Soccer.
So that was Denise O'Sullivan, and that game against Belgium is live here on 2FM tomorrow evening and also on RT2 television, or you can head down to the Aviva Stadium and watch it if you do wish. Speaking of stadiums, let's cross over now to Tala, because Adrian Eames is there ahead of the Shamrock Rovers game against Celje. How are you, Adrian?
Not bad, Marie. Not bad at all. And the teams are in ahead of kickoff, which is at 8 o'clock. And the Shamrock Rovers lineup includes the birthday boy himself, Rory Gaffney, who is 36 today. Ed McGinty in goal. A back three of Cleary, Lopez and Matthews. Corey O'Sullivan and Honahan as the wing-backs. Josh Honahan back after injury. A midfield trio of Conor Malley, Matt Healy and Dylan Watts. Gaffney and Mandroyu will provide the attacking threat for Shamrock Rovers. This is going to be a tough game, Marie, for Shamrock Rovers, albeit they overcame Celje over the course of two legs last. Just edged them out by 3-2, but it's a much changed Celje team this evening. They defeated AEK of Athens in their opening game in this Conference League competition, and of course they're managed by the former Liverpool player Albert Riera, and himself and Stephen Bradley involved in a bit of a spat last year, but I imagine that's probably forgotten at this stage. So it's a tough ask for Shamrock Rovers, but Stephen Bradley has targeted this game since the draw was made. Obviously that 4-1 defeat in Prague wasn't on his radar, but he selected a team that evening with the Cup semi-final against Kerry very much in mind. But tonight the focus very much on Celje, the Slovenian side here at Tala Stadium. Conditions absolutely ideal. There's been a bit of rain around it a little earlier, but the pitch looks great.
Sounds good. Very good, Adrian. Thank you so much for all of that. Looking forward to seeing how that one goes. Are you confident of a Shamrock Rovers win, Keith Tracy?
I wouldn't say confident. I do give them half a chance. I think Pico Lopez coming back is a huge, huge lift for Shamrock Rovers, as is Josh Honahan. Yeah, I think they've earned the right not to be written off in any of these European games, but as Adrian just said in the build, of Celje are a very, very good teams, and it feels like they're on a little bit of a revenge mission given what happened last year.
55 minutes nearly on the clock now. Skenje and Shelburne are still scoreless. Are Shelburne looking like they might get something here?
They're looking like, to be honest, Maria, has draw written all over it, but Skenja are the ones going forward. They're getting some shots off, but generally they're from 25, 30 yards out. They haven't really worked Spiel in the Shelburne goal. But if anybody's on top, it is Skenja. But as I say, they're not working a goalkeeper, not really banging on the back door, but shading the play for now.
Yeah, it'd be phenomenal if they could get a result, just given how far Shells have come over the last number of years, wouldn't it?
Oh, of course it would, yeah. When you, like, I go back to when Damien Duff left the club, you're thinking, my God, Joey O'Brien's got such a big, big job on his hands given the shadow that Damien Duff left. But Joey O'Brien's been brilliant. The Shelburne players have been absolutely excellent. And given the fact that it looks like they're going to make the European places within the League of Ireland table, that's all but done and in the back pocket. And I think for a draw within Europe, I think it's 133,000, and a win is 400,000. So any sort of result in any of these games, big, big financial reward.
Yeah, for sure. OK, we're going to turn our attention now to US sports. Jeff Shepherd is with us on the line all the way from the United States. Shep, there's a lot happening and very little of it is to do with on-field action. It is actually off-the-field action that is very much getting the attention from the US sports perspective. And that is a major basketball gambling operation that was brought to light by the FBI. Tell us about this.
FBI arrested Terry Rozier, who's a basketball player for the Miami Heat, and the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers, Chauncey Billups. They were among maybe 30, 35 people that were arrested for their alleged roles in a gambling conspiracy that involved members of the mafia and organized crime units. And some of it was related to on-court basketball things. The NBA had investigated Terry Rozier a couple of years ago for, you know, you can bet, Marie, you know, you can bet on a player's performance. Well, they scored more than this many points, played more than this many minutes, things like that. And the NBA investigated him a couple of years ago for, some weird looking things. And the FBI said, no, this is a little deeper than that. And then the Chauncey Billups stuff, the coach, his stuff isn't, or his charges aren't alleged to anything on the court. It's set up with poker games that were rigged from the start. And Marie, some of these things kind of sound like it's out of a James Bond movie, like there was an X-ray machine built into the table so they could look at the cards that were face down, and people were wearing contacts and eyeglasses that you could see through the cards. So a lot of this stuff is obviously still developing. All of this kind of, you know, broke this morning. But, I mean, this is absolutely huge and just a nightmare for the NBA, as you know, as they're celebrating their opening week this week. I mean, games are just tipping off the last couple of days.
Wow, it sounds like that is going to be getting quite a lot of attention for quite some time, and no doubt we'll be talking to you about it again. Jeff Shepherd, thank you so much for that. Looking forward to the update. That is all we have time for. Keith, anything happening?
Not a lot, no. As you say, Skinner are the ones still probing, but Shelbourne look nice and solid, and I'm trying my best not to give them the kiss of death, but they look fairly comfortable.
Yeah. You sure?
Well, they do. Like, Skinner are the ones probing and prodding, and they've got the ball out wide. They don't seem to want to cross it, and when you come into the middle of the park, it's so bubbly and you need one or two touches to get the ball under control. That's when the Shelbourne players are able to go in and snap into tackles. But we see now the Becco getting in behind once or twice in the first 45 minutes. That hasn't happened at all in the second half so far.
Great. Keith, thank you so much. I found the page that I was looking for, so appreciate that. Well, Andrew O'Connor is going to be back here tomorrow from 6 o'clock on 2FM. He's going to preview all of the weekend sport, and we're going to have an extended show until 9 o'clock at the Aviva Stadium with live commentary of the Republic of Ireland's Nations League playoff first leg against Belgium. But up next, here on 2FM, it's the new music show.
This is 2FM.